You're listening to RTE Lyric Live with the National Symphony Orchestra.
I wonder if the young Johannes Brahms, as a 20-year-old composer, had any notion on the 30th September 1853 how his meeting with Robert Schumann, and perhaps more pertinently, his meeting Robert's wife Clara, would change the course of his life. Johannes Brahms was virtually unknown in 1853. He hadn't risen to stardom as a child. Unlike Mozart, Beethoven or Mendelssohn, he hadn't been paraded before the public as a child's prodigy. In the busy port of Hamburg, the son of a fairly impoverished double bass player, Johannes supplemented a meagre family income during his teenage years by playing piano in dubious taverns along the industrial seafront. Here he saw the seedier side of life. But his musical potential was recognised by his early teachers. Nearly all of them gave their services free of charge because this boy was different. In this boy were planted the seeds of genius. It was not an unhappy childhood by any means, and as Johannes travelled over the course of many years further and further from home, ineluctably drawn to the glittering centre of the cultural world in Vienna, his circle of musical acquaintances grew. Early on, he made a lifelong friend of the violinist Joseph Joachim. As the rising star of all German violinists at the time, Joachim had an entree into every corner of the musical world, something which the young Brahms, as a more or less unknown entity, didn't. And it was Joseph Joachim who brought Brahms to play at the Schumann's house on the 30th of September 1853, a fateful meeting. Robert Schumann was bowled over by Brahms's performance and by his compositions. As he ran to get his wife Clara, one of the greatest concert pianists of her day, he's reported to have said to her, "You will hear such music as you will never have heard before." It seemed to me that there would, and indeed must, suddenly appear one man who would be singled out to articulate and give the ideal expression to the tendencies of our time, one man who would show us his mastery, not through a gradual process, but Athene-like, springing fully armed from the head of Zeus. And he has come, a young man over whose cradle graces and heroes stood guard. His name is Johannes Brahms. Robert Schumann wrote those words in a fulsome article for the leading musical journal of the day. Both Robert and Clara were hugely impressed by the young eagle, as they termed him. But their admiration was nothing compared to the impression left on the lively mind and boyish heart of the young Brahms. Suddenly and unexpectedly, he'd been accepted into the circle of two of the towering figures of German music at the time and had been hailed by them as a virtual messiah. Such recognition, however, far from making him think that he was worthy of the honour, only served to amplify Brahms's already rigorous self-criticism, one which was to grow and develop over his lifetime. If the meeting with the Schumanns affected his musical being in such a profound manner, it was nothing to the effect it had on this young man's emotional core. Slowly, gradually, inevitably, he fell in love, profoundly and completely, with Clara. It could hardly have been a more tumultuous time to have met the Schumanns. Unbeknownst to all of them, life in the Schumann household was about to alter drastically. Robert could never have been described as a stable character. Probably that was why Clara's father had been so adamantly opposed to their marriage in the first place. Although deeply in love with her husband, Clara recorded in her diary the unusually possessive and maybe obsessive ways in which he reacted to her own success as a solo concert pianist. As more children were born, however, she had less time to devote to Robert or indeed to her career. Whatever the cause, an inborn behavioral weakness or one brought on by the onset of syphilis, Robert's personality began to show more and more disconcerting signs of instability. Robert had been working on a set of variations for piano, the theme of which he was convinced had been dictated to him by spirits. Increasingly, he complained of sometimes wonderful and sometimes devilish sounds in his head. On the night of February 27th, 1854, he suddenly put down his pen as he worked on his manuscript, left the house and threw himself into the Rhine, having fought his way through a street festival happening in Dusseldorf at the time. He was rescued by a passing boat, but in moments of clarity following this terrible incident, he realised he was going mad. He was taken to an asylum clinic upstream from Dusseldorf at the little town of Endenich in early March, and he was never to leave there. For the next 2 years, as Clara experienced at a distance her husband's worsening depression and mental illness, his descent into madness, Brahms was selflessly at her side to support her. While Robert deteriorated slowly in an asylum, Clara's situation could hardly have been more desperate. She had to find from somewhere the money to feed a young family of six children, with a seventh baby expected in June of that year, and pay the bills for keeping Robert at Endenich. She'd no source of income except her concert and compositional career, and while a steady stream of well-meaning but importunate friends came to visit her at her house, with the best of intentions, she was on the verge of a nervous breakdown. Brahms, for all his youthfulness, took charge and undoubtedly helped her regain her equilibrium and the ability to face an uncertain future, a fact Clara often attested to in the years to come. Clara did indeed survive the heartbreaking circumstances of her life through her sheer strength of character, but at the same time, Johannes himself was making tremendous sacrifices on her behalf because he felt his first duty was to Clara. He put his own career more or less on hold and depleted his meagre financial resources without a second thought. And while doing everything he could to look after Clara, his admiration and involvement unsurprisingly moved from loyal friendship to something much deeper. In a letter to his friend Joachim, he revealed his innermost thoughts. "I believe that I do not have more concern and admiration for her than that I love her and am under her spell. I often must restrain myself forcibly from just quietly putting my arms around her, and even, I do not know, it seems to me so natural that she could not misunderstand. I think I can no longer love a mere girl. At least I have quite forgotten about them. They but promise heaven, while Clara shows it revealed to us." What was it that so attracted Brahms to Clara, a married woman almost 14 years his senior and a mother of seven children? A psychiatrist might point to the fact that Brahms' own mother was 17 years older than his father. A musician might emphasise their shared, passionate obsession with the art of music. A cynic might say that the vulnerable young man sought out the sort of family security and protectiveness which Clara represented. Or was it just a case of a naive young man's first overwhelming experience of love? Some hint of Brahms's profound feelings about Clara is supposedly heard within his first piano concerto. The slow movement is reputed to be his musical portrait of her. Thank you. It's hard to imagine the emotional turmoil which must have been going on in Clara's mind at this time. She was denied access to her deranged husband because the doctors thought it would only exacerbate his condition. She steeled herself to go back to the concert hall and earn a living to keep her family. She must have seen how, as the days and months passed, young Johannes unconditionally gave up so much of his own life to be at her side, help her, uphold her in this nightmare. In her diary, Clara confided that perhaps she was appointed to be a mother to him and that she really loved him like a son. From the material that still exists, that's almost as close as we ever get to a candid admission of some sort of emotional involvement. But can we blame her for, on the one hand, accepting the loving support of a young man so evidently wishing to help when she was going through a private emotional hell and at the same time not totally discouraging Johannes from a path to which there was no final destination? Eventually, Johannes Brahms wrote to Clara of his love for her, but we have no evidence of any reciprocal declaration. We don't know, but we can assume, that his love was rejected quietly and gently over a period of time. How else could she respond when he wrote with this sort of passion? Would to God that I were allowed this day to repeat to you with my own lips that I am dying for love of you. One was as vulnerable as the other, but for wholly different reasons. A conclusion of sorts was reached on the 29th of July, 1856, when Robert Schumann died at the asylum in Endenich. Clara had been summoned 2 days before to make her final farewell, the first and last time she was to see him in over 2 years. She was so overcome by his death that she was unable to attend his funeral. Brahms and Joachim acted as chief mourners, with Brahms carrying Clara's laurel wreath and laying it on Robert's coffin. It's hard to know what exactly happened in the ensuing months, but what became clear in retrospect was that there was never to be a formal recognition of their relationship, whatever that relationship had actually been. Clara determined to remain a widow and mother to her 7 children on her own. When Brahms eventually, and perhaps abruptly, made up his mind that he would have to accept Clara's limits to the relationship, he rarely spoke of it again. His was a love, however, which would last the rest of his life. But it was to remain platonic. Though he was always at Clara's beck and call should she ask for his assistance, outwardly, Johannes got over it and got on with living. In the ensuing years, Johannes did fall in love with other women. He almost married Agatha von Siebold, but didn't. He probably could have, but didn't, proposed to Louise Dustermund, Elizabeth von Herzogenberg, Alice Barbie, or indeed a host of other female admirers who fell for his handsome good looks, his piercingly blue eyes, his long blonde hair, his attractive fame. But as he grew older, Brahms became more and more set in his ways, as most bachelors do, paying less and less attention to his appearance and hiding, almost, behind a prodigious but unkempt grey beard. He wasn't above scandal, and his associations with less than appropriate female company sometimes leaked out. Despite the gruff exterior, Brahms was not oblivious of the physical pleasures of life. If the passion of youth faded in the relationship between Brahms and Clara, a more profound friendship grew steadily in the decades that followed. After a request for help, he wrote to her, "Let this deep love of mine be a comfort to you, for I love you more than myself, more than anybody or anything on earth." It was obvious that throughout his life he meant exactly that, and Clara, for her part, was always conscious of the very special place she held in her heart for her Johannes. Ever practical, she was more than willing to play and promote his music, enthusiastic to suggest changes and amendments, or to pour lavish praise on his new compositions. For his part, Brahms wrote prolifically to her and spent as much time as he could, and, as he was permitted, in visits to her and her family. Much of his later piano music was written specifically with her in mind, as increasing arthritis dimmed and eclipsed her concert career. It was in February 1896 that Clara suffered a slight stroke. Johannes immediately wrote to her daughter to ask just how serious the situation was. If you think the worst is to be expected, be so good as to let me know, so that I may come while those dear eyes are still open. For when they close, so much will end for me. Some weeks later, Clara had a second, more severe stroke, and in the afternoon of the 20th of May, she died. When Brahms eventually received the news, he travelled all through the night and most of the following day, across Austria and Germany, on a journey of 36 hours, just to be at her graveside, and to cast his handful of earth on the coffin of the only one he had ever truly loved. Clara's dear eyes were indeed closed at last, and within 11 months, Brahms himself was dead. It would be facile to say that the frustrations, the rejections, the might have beens in the life of Johannes Brahms left him resigned, introverted, unfulfilled. The biggest and perhaps saddest disappointment of all being his undying but unresolved love for Clara. But in so much of his music, which is surely the truest expression of his character, of his soul, there's a stoical strength and a sad beauty which still resonates across the centuries. Would that music have been so rich emotionally if Brahms had never met Clara on that fateful day in September 1853 and fallen in love?
You're listening to RTE Lyric Live with the National Symphony Orchestra.